Welcome to the Currency.News podcast. It pays to be curious.
Environmental, social, governance, ESG. Three letters. But those three letters can have a profound impact on businesses, from their engagement with staff to stakeholders to investors. Increasingly, ESG matters. But how can companies ensure they're doing the right thing at the right time to deliver the right outcome? To tease through some of those issues, I'm delighted to be joined in the podcast studio here today by David McGee, who's the ESG lead for PwC in Ireland. David, you're very welcome.
Thank you.
David, we're chatting here today as part of the PwC Leadership Exchange series, which is addressing a series of issues that impact Ireland, the world and businesses. And one of those big issues at the moment is ESG. I'm going to begin, if you don't mind, with a very obvious, a very down to basics question. Obviously, companies know that ESG matters. It's been rammed home to them time and time again. But there's a disconnect between what they want to do and how they can do it. And I think an awful lot of companies are trying to figure out how they can embed ESG into their business beyond the rhetoric, but into the reality. When they come to you, what do you tell them?
Well, let me just go back to an assumption in your question first, because I'm not convinced every company has fully embraced going green and everything that ESG embodies. And we might come back to that later on. But what is happening is regulation and consumer sentiment. I always say there is two people who are critically important to any business. Who's going to buy your stuff or your services, and who's going to give you capital? So investors and customers slash consumers really matter. And those two cohorts are increasingly concerned about getting ESG right. That's what's really putting pressure on organizations.
So it's coming from the stakeholders, the consumers themselves, and companies have to react.
Absolutely. And there is a third cohort of stakeholders, which is employees. So we increasingly see in our survey data that people want to work for companies that they perceive as doing the right thing. And we live in a world of much greater transparency than we've ever had before. So it's a situation where whatever cohort you belong to, you can know what's going on. And we will see more of that over the coming years.
There's a lot of issues I want to tease through here in our limited time span. But obviously, we understand the E, environmental. It's the green. We understand the governance. The S is a little bit harder to define, I think, David.
Yeah, and the social pillar is about a number of different items. So some things are probably already in the general public consciousness. Things like gender pay gap. We've seen the government awareness campaign around gender pay gap. Now regulation, all companies above a certain size must publish and so on. And you're seeing lots of commentary on that. But there's other pieces that are important for our well-being in the world, and this really matters. Things like your overall diversity. Things like, are you positive that there's no modern slavery anywhere back in your supply chain? Are you confident that the people who depend on your value chain, right, are actually being treated fairly and equitably and in a good, and that matters in lots of ways beyond the bottom line.
You pulled me up at the start and you said not every company is thinking about ESG. And maybe they're not, okay? But if they're not, or if they haven't done enough, what's your advice to them if they're behind the curve at this point?
So I think not everybody has embraced ESG, but I think what CSRD reporting is doing is forcing it on
the
agenda.
Sorry, let's explain that to people, okay? I know what it is. I've been to the seminars, but I think a lot of people out there...
A fair shout.
Don't know what that is.
So the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive is an EU law that's coming in this year and that will come in stages from the largest companies and work down. And in essence, what it means is everybody's got to report in a consistent and audited manner on the key elements of ESG. And I'll give you a stat that will explain why this is really important. Up at the top, I said investors are one of the cohorts who really care. In our last investor survey, 97% of professional investors said they do not believe the climate data they're getting from companies. That means 3% of them didn't understand the question, right? Effectively, all investors are saying, I don't believe what I'm getting because it's not audited, it's not apples to apples, and CSRD will clean all that up.
Okay. And we'll come back to that over the course of our conversation here today. I just want to ask you a question. So you're advising companies, you're talking to companies day in, day out. Are sustainability considerations, are they helping to frame their strategic decisions? Is it coming into, at a high level, like, as you said, not all companies are tracking this, but at a high level and the top companies, are they starting to frame their strategic decisions over where the company is going and how they're getting there?
Very much so. And what we're seeing with leading companies is that overlap where no longer do you have a corporate strategy and a sustainability strategy. The Venn diagram's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and eventually they'll just completely overlap.
So there is that crossover now.
Very much so, because what gets measured gets managed. And once you start writing down your numbers, you look at it and say, now I need to make my number better, particularly when that number is public. And what that forces you to do is think about things like, how do I re-engineer my value chain to take carbon or other emissions out of it, or to make sure it's fair to all the people who are working in it? How do I make sure I can gain some kind of competitive advantage out of this? Can I engage with different consumers, kind of provide different services? But it's forcing people to think both about the risks and the opportunities that exist in their business.
And I do want to I'll come back to those in a couple of moments, David, about that risk and opportunity, because there are risks and there are opportunities. I'm just wondering, when people think of ESG, one of the first things they think of is climate, for obvious reasons, this green agenda. Where do you think, and that's very current, but where do you think the next phase of ESG is going to move to as companies ramp up their investment? And I don't just mean financial, I mean intellectual investment as well, into ensuring that they're doing this, you know, correctly.
Yeah, and I think you're spot on. I think the next wave is, there's elements within the social pillar, but I actually also think nature and biodiversity is the next big wave. The EU is looking at regulation on it. You're increasingly seeing commentary. It is one we need to work harder at to explain to companies why it's directly relevant, because it's harder to make the direct economic payback in a way you can with, for example, because of carbon taxes, for example, with decarbonisation. But I think between regulation and education, consumer awareness, we need to drive at that, because nature and biodiversity is linked very much to the climate issue.
It's funny, when I talk to companies, there is almost a disconnect between the size of the company and obviously some of the publicly listed companies and what I'll call the big Irish multinationals, even if they're not listed, are on top of this, because the directive that you spoke so eloquently about, they need to deal with it. But a lot of the smaller companies, I think, and I'm not just meaning micro enterprises, I'm talking about the S and the M with a lowercase m in SME, they're looking at it, I think, perhaps a little bit confused.
Yeah. And I think there's a few of the L for large companies who are still a little bit confused, but by and large, I think what's going to happen there is the strength of the way the regulations, one of the strengths of the way the regulations are set up, is they force the big companies who are first caught in the net for reporting to look up and down their value chain, which means they've got to go and have the conversation with the small companies who are supplying them. And that's where you'll start to pick up and start addressing. Because if I want to engage with big company and I'm a small company, the easier I make that in terms of getting my emissions measured, having commitments around S&G and having policies around that, means I can plug into the larger ecosystem much easier. And I think that's the nuance in the regulation. It's actually the tentacles will spread out, because everybody's scope 3 is someone else's scope 1 and 2.
I'm minded of a quote by the late Tony O'Reilly, when he said, you know, the most dangerous phrase in business was, "I'm from central government, I'm here to help." I'll throw another one there, net zero, because it causes a certain amount of panic amongst companies. How can companies get there? What should they be aspiring to? And I suppose even take it down a level, where should they begin?
I think they should begin by trying to make a commitment and put some science-based targets against that. So that's about baselining where they're at right now and understanding where the emissions. I mean, to be fair, there are a number of industries that are in that, what we call that hard to abate sector, where there isn't technology solutions to fix. So let's take aviation as an obvious one, right? Yeah. And I don't just mean aviation, but businesses who depend heavily on aviation to execute their business, right? It's hard to get rid of those emissions out of your value chain. So trying to think about what do you do? But the first thing is to set that target, put some science-based and then science-based support behind it, and then say, okay, what does that mean to my value chain? Because the real risk here, if you're the CEO or you're the chair, your real risk, as in any great pivot in modern commerce, the real risk is disruptors emerge who don't have the legacy investment and just approach the value chain a completely different way. And I think the companies that are really thinking ahead to both the risks and the opportunities, thinking, what would I do if I was starting from blank? What if someone just gave me capital and said, go? Would I do this differently? And in most industries, you would. Now, accepting it, there are sectors where we don't have a technology solution yet, and there's lots of capital pouring in to try to fix that.
Including in aviation.
Including in aviation. Yeah.
As you said, you're at the coalface of it. What approaches in relation to net zero are you seeing that are working on a practical level that maybe some of our listeners here today can say, okay, that's something I can take forward.
So once you understand your baseline and once you understand what targets you're trying to get to, then I think companies need to work through each part of their value chain. Most companies will very quickly deal with scope one. And so let's assume not everybody knows what that, but that's the emissions that you directly emit from being in business and executing your business. And scope two is whatever energy source you use that. A lot of companies, not everyone, but most companies can deal with that pretty quickly, right? So you will see methods to buy renewable energy sources and pull renewable energy off the grid. You will see mechanisms where they will change their light bulbs, change their energy usage, the machines and devices and so on that use it. What's hard for most people is scope three. And scope three is what happens outside of the perimeter of your organization that is creating greenhouse gas emissions generally. And how do you, and that involves working with your suppliers, working with your customers to get them to change their behaviors or change how they operate. Now, they should be looking at that at the same time because of their scope one and two. So if I take my own organization, we've done our scope one and two. We've effectively zeroed out everything in scope one and two, but our problem is scope three, because we're a services company and we provide services all over the island and all over the world, frankly. So our people move all the time, and that's where the challenge is.
Yeah, and I'm interested you used the word challenge, because this was something you referenced earlier, but this idea of the opportunity and the challenges. I think a lot of companies, not to speak for them all, but a lot of companies are looking at it going, will I not just wait? I appreciate there might be opportunities, of which I'm not sure, but I certainly know that there are really big challenges in implementing this. What sort of incentive, what sort of bottom line incentive can companies expect if they can get this right?
I and one of the things I really try to get across when you get in at a senior level to have the conversation is stop thinking about this just as compliance, stop thinking about this just as risk management. Those two are really important, but there are opportunities here. And those disruptive smaller competitors will see the opportunity if you don't start to think about them. And I think it comes back to that access to capital. Right now, we are seeing all forms of capital starting to incentivize green and try to encourage people to move towards green. That gives you an advantage. But also, we know that customers and consumers, either because it's what they want or because they're trying to deal with their own net zero commitment, have an incentive to buy and access your services if you are someone who's gone on that journey. So look at the opportunities as well. Look at how you can gain share. Look at how you can access new markets. And look at how you can lead in your sector. And there's also a greater societal good, lest we forget that. But there's a real hard bottom line to this as well.
Yeah, which is, I mean, we talk about that societal good, which is crucially important. But to try and translate that to make sure the business runs. Listen, I want to move on to the idea of regulation, something we touched upon in competitive advantage. You referenced the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive. It's quite a mouthful. And I think it's, to sum it up, it's essentially companies are used to filing audited accounts. This will sit in there in the same way. What's the best practice that you've seen so far that companies should be trying to mirror and improve upon?
Start early, right? That's the first best practice we've seen, and the leading companies have got out ahead of it. And you've talked about there has been endless seminars and opportunities online to learn and figure this out. But once you've said, I'm going to start, there's a well-worn path here. You need to, the first step is a double materiality assessment, right? So you need to go through your business and think about the elements within your business against a set of criteria that are defined in the directive to say, how important is this to my business in terms of the bottom line, and how big an impact is it on the external stakeholders? And that double materiality, what you're effectively doing in this stage is building a questionnaire tailored to you. So not everyone, there are potentially up to 1,200 questions. Not every organization has to answer all 1,200, and this DMA...
One would hope.
But you work through this to work out, what do I need to answer? That's when the real work starts, because in a lot of cases, you won't have that data. If you have the data, it may not be in a robust form that you're confident it would pass an audit. And then, as you say, it'll ultimately have to be audited and filed in exactly the way your company accounts are, and can be then downloaded by journalists, investment analysts, the general public, customers, and everyone can look at it. And they know that they're looking at something that's using the same methodology across everybody and has been audited in the same way.
But the upshot of that is that it's measurable. Right,
absolutely.
That you know if you're improving,
absolutely.
And you know if you're not improving, as opposed to we're doing great. This is a very clear, calculated way of measuring how you're performing.
Let's say you are, because one of the things that boards ask me all the time is, how will we get a payback on this, right? One of the problems at the moment is you can't prove you're doing better than anyone else. I suspect next year, one of the first things that journalists are going to do is go in and take an industry, right? And pull down all the reports for that industry and start publishing league tables. Who actually has done the best? Because everyone's facing the same abatement challenges in their industry. Who's doing the best at taking out those GHGs? Who's doing the best on the S dimension and the G dimension? And they'll be able to compare and line up and publish those league tables. That will get boards and C-suite exercised, because if you are, I'm desperately trying to avoid any particular industry to not embarrass anybody, if you're in a particular industry and you come out as a laggard, you're going to have to deal with that, because you're suddenly going to get questions from those cohorts, the investors, your staff and your customers.
And finally, you mentioned there investors, staff, and other people. I mean, certainly we're seeing it with a younger cohort of employees in particular coming into companies. ESG matters in a way that it didn't matter 5, 10, 15 years ago. And that's starting to, I suppose, translate into investors, that it's becoming more and more important to stakeholders.
Yeah, and they've grown up with a problem that, frankly, my generation created. Half the carbon in the atmosphere has been released since Seinfeld first aired. Just think about that. That means that my generation pumped half the carbon that's sitting out there in the atmosphere.
It's a staggering number, isn't it?
Yeah, but think about the world that you and I were born into, where not everybody on the road I grew up on had a car. Now there's 2 or 3 cars per household. Not everybody went on a foreign holiday. Now everybody goes on at least a foreign holiday. We've moved to a world where the level of consumption is so vast that it's just created a huge amount of carbon and other emissions into the atmosphere.
If we were having this conversation, finally, David, in 2 or 3 years' time, what do you think would be the key points we'd be trying to address?
What I'd be hoping we'll be addressing is we'll actually have quantified the problem, and that market forces, because I believe in market forces,
it's the only way to solve this.
It is, because what we've seen is, and I don't want this to be misinterpreted, everybody needs to keep recycling and segregating the rubbish and trying to buy EVs where they can afford to buy EVs and travel less and eat less red meat and all that kind of good stuff. But actually what we know is the consumer is trying to change their behaviour will never fix this, because we know from lots of data sources, consumers are not prepared to make the big sacrifices. So you've got to get regulation from government and you've got to get corporates moving in the right direction. And that's what this is all about.
Well, David McGee, ESG lead for PwC in Ireland, thank you very much for joining me here today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Currency.news podcast. It pays to be curious.